I had been listening to a lot of pop music, and I come from a classical background too, but when I heard her music, it was an amalgamation of all the styles, blues, jazz, pop, gospel, and she somehow elevated pop music to the level of art, and I had never heard anything like that before, not to mention her voice was just something also that was so unique, and again, I never heard that type of music before, and her chords were just so just different. She was trying different things, that, and it came from a jazz element. And again, I, as a young girl, I was only a teenager, so I wasn't exposed to too much at that point. It blew my mind.
She was better known, I would think, as a songwriter more than a performer. And from what I understand, she didn't really pursue stardom. In fact, she walked away from the business for a while and then returned. Why do you think her songwriting exceeded her performing in the minds of the general public?
I think that Laura didn't really like parts of show business. And she walked away because she was more of an artist, as I said earlier. She was more of an artist than she was a performer. She was her concerts sold out in minutes at like Carnegie Hall on Christmas Eve and things like that. And, she was a great performer, but she just didn't fit the mold, I think, that the higher-ups had for her in the business. And to do the whole thing that you had to go through to get to the different levels, she was not interested in it. She was interested in just writing the music and getting the song and interpreting it her way.
And there's a great diversity in her music. And When I Die by Blood, Sweat, and Tears is quite different than Stone Soul Picnic by the Fifth Dimension and different from Eli's Coming. There's a real diversity there. Most people don't realize that she wrote all those different tunes for all those different bands.
Yep, that's very true. Very true. She had a wide library in her mind that she drew from. I mean, she listened to Nina Simone and a lot of opera and classical. She loved John Coltrane and McCoy Tyner and Miles Davis. So I think it showed in her writing. It just was all different styles, and that's why some songs just don't resemble others.
She died in 1997 at the age of 49 of cancer. Is her music still alive today? I know you're trying to keep it alive, but is there a new generation now appreciating Laura Nyro?
Yeah, it's just as viable today to me, and I think many others too, as it was then. And it's a shame that she, who I think was a genius, is not remembered in the way she should be. She was nominated to and inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2012. So thankfully, that happened. And but again, there's so many young people who don't know her. So hopefully what I'm doing with my band that will raise the consciousness about Laura.
Tell us more about your performance at the Bridge Center. It's, from what I understand, called Spiro Does Nyro. Is that it?
Well, Spiro Plays Nyro, yep. Well, luckily I have the last name Spiro, Christine Spiro. So I could name our next CD, which is coming out next month, Spiro Plays Nyro as well as our show. And we have a quartet, and it's myself singing and playing piano. Elliot Spiro is playing percussion and saxophones. Peter O'Brien on drums and Scott Petito on bass. And we give it our own, as well as keeping it alive in Laura's style and what people recognize as what she did. We also add our own unique personalities to it, and there's some interpretation and like solos and maybe a little bit different, but we try to keep the integrity of Laura's music alive. And our show is, I guess it's about 2 hours of songs that were, as you said, the most popular, Stone Soul Picnic and Eli's Coming and of that style, and also some others that people might not know as well, that were off on New York Tenderberry and Christmas and the Beads of Sweat. Just doing a lot of stuff across the board of Laura's material.